Welcome to Finding Your Identity, the podcast about helping you find your identity. Welcome back to Finding Your Identity. This is Derek McKinney, and this is episode 33. And I had some stuff, you know, some things were going on. And so I was away for a little bit. But I'm back now with episode 33. Ready for the next episode. Hold up. Wait. Yeah. So we're going to talk about some throwback type of stuff. And I was listening to this new song that came out, and it was inspiration for this episode. And it was a pretty cool song called Old Me by 5 Seconds of Summer. And this is a little bit of it. Shout out to the old me and everything he showed me. Glad you didn't listen when the world was trying to slow me. No one could control me. Left my lovers lonely. Had to back it up before I really got to know me. All right. That's like, you know, a little bit of a lead-in. Kind of a throwback. And I think back mainly because this episode is actually going to be about peer pressure. And to some degree, there's a little bit of the psychology side of how you kind of act differently around different people. So, you know, you act differently around your parents versus how you act around friends. As you get older, those kind of blend together, but there's some interesting psychology that goes into that. And, you know, there's some reasons actually why that's the case. But I just think back to when I was a kid, when I was a teenager, and, you know, how I acted like a knucklehead, and I wasn't ashamed to act like a knucklehead. And that's shameful, you know, but I guess it all helped to contribute to build in to my character that I have now. But, you know, there's some things that I guess I'm not proud. No, not I guess, but I know I'm not proud of that, you know, some of the things that I did when I was younger and a knucklehead. So, you know, I mean, this isn't supposed to be an episode where I'm like confessing to my sins or, you know, going on an apology tour or something like that. It's just, you know, this one of these things that that song I was listening to just kind of got me thinking about my childhood or my younger years, and, you know, how different I was around different people, and also how the peer pressure drove some of my poor decision making. So I figured I'd do an episode about it because it's interesting, and I mean, you might find it interesting, and everybody does it. Everybody essentially has this in their psyche to kind of act differently. You'll act differently around your boss, you know, versus acting differently around your children, or acting differently around your spouse, differently around your friends, differently around strangers, you know, differently around strangers that you start to know better because you might be in a situation where you're stuck with several strangers for a long period of time, like if you do jury duty. So just a couple thoughts. I'm going to do this episode about that, and I'm going to get started in a minute. So we jumping into the meat of this then. All right. Not to get into the weeds too quickly, but in psychology, there's a term called schema. So let's just get the big words out of the way, right? Right off the bat, jumping into it. Schema is actually used as kind of a way to describe indexing of your thoughts. And, you know, that kind of, and how it kind of relates to relationships. But if you just think of it as like a filing system, folder structure, directory structure, what have you, where you're essentially, you know, setting ideas and thoughts and feelings and in your brain into different sections into, you know, so you're categorizing, right? And so you categorize all these different things, and you kind of end up, the concept of it within relationships is where you can end up categorizing different feelings and emotions and behaviors with different people. So that concept where I was talking about, you know, you essentially acting differently around different people, and, you know, that concept is really just that you have a kind of an established template for how you're going to act in a certain situation or around those certain people. So, for instance, you're going with your friends to a party, and these are friends that are well known, and you feel comfortable around them, and so you're going to say your silly jokes or your, you know, shoot from the hip comments, your shot from the hip comments. But, you know, you're going to be comfortable around them because, you know, your friends will laugh at you and they're more forgiving, and you don't feel any kind of pressure to live up to any kind of standards, you know, but you're on your way to the party. But then you get to the party and you're now surrounded by not so close friends, right? So these are more like acquaintances, and you're a little bit more careful how you might come across with a joke, you know, and you might end up having those little exchanges with your friend with looks or under the breath comments, you know, where you've got the inside joke, and you feel like you've got somebody there who's, you know, your tether to, I guess, your real life or the real you, but you don't fully expose yourself because you're being cautious, and, you know, you don't want to embarrass yourself, so you're not completely open, right? So that's kind of how it is. But you could start to warm up to the other people, and then, you know, maybe as you slip and say a funny joke that you, or something you thought was funny, but you don't think is something that you should have just told the stranger. But then that stranger kind of laughs at it and thinks it's hilarious. And it's like there's a kinship, you know, kinship forming all of a sudden. And you guys have something in common, and everything is funny. And now it's the three of you and blah, 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 la, 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 ha, 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 laughing at the party. Yeah. I don't know if that's actually how it went down. You know, I didn't go to a ton of parties when I was younger. Well, yeah, I don't know. Party scene wasn't really my thing. Definitely went to like parties, but see, the problem was, is I really wasn't into drinking. And a lot of times that was what the kids were just doing at the party. So I just didn't go, or I kind of hung out with a few people at first until things got a little crazy, and then I took off or whatever. But, or, you know, if I went with like a girl, it was like a girlfriend or something like that, then we just kind of hang out, and that was different. But, you know, I don't know, the situation might be slightly, or it might be severely different between boys and girls, you know, as you're growing up. But I just I definitely remember there were moments, you know, even within my circle of friends, because it was, you know, tighter friendships towards the center of the circle, and as you kind of went out and there was acquaintances, or the common situation where you had a friend of a friend because your friend brought one of their older, you know, friends from their past, and then you kind of got introduced, and it was kind of like they got a, you know, that was their ticket in, they got to play the friend card in a sense, this new acquaintance, but they kind of got in. And then sometimes it'd be awkward, or they really tried to, you know, lean into the jokes a little bit too hard, or act like they knew the inside jokes, or they may pick up on some of those cues of the inside jokes, but you're like, I don't know who you are. You know, you're not one of us. You need to back up, or know your role, or know your place, you know. But as that person maybe comes around more often, you know, days, months pass, and next thing you know, he's like one of your friends. And like, I have a good friend where it kind of started in a strange way like that. It was a friend of a friend, and that friend was friends with him because his what was this? His old best friend dated this guy's sister, somehow that's how the relationship started. But then, you know, these two friends became friends over the other friend because the other friend fell away. And it's, you know, all the funny relationship stuff that happens with friends. But he started coming around more. And so then it was, you know, then the three of us. But I had this other friend who I was a little bit closer to at the time. And I was hanging out with that one more often. So like as a group, we'd all hang out, but we wouldn't hang out separately until we got to know each other more. And then it was like, okay, then the, you know, the two of us would end up becoming friends and hanging out on our own, you know, without the friend that introduced us. And relationships are complicated, man, I'll tell you, because it's, you know, there's definitely like slight imbalances that could all of a sudden cause you to no longer be friends, and you fall out of favor with them, or they fall out of favor with you, or something happens to kind of cause a rift because there's, you know, always drama. Could be females got in between you, or, you know, another friend got in between you, or who knows? Lots of things. But you go through lots of friends, but then, you know, you'll find that the ones that are still around and you can still talk to and reach out to after 30-something years, those are the ones that are, you know, those are the ones that you just knew at the time were your friends. And it's kind of cool. And those relationships kind of fill out over time and evolve. And you grow apart. You get old. You get older. You get married. You have kids. And, you know, next thing you know, you don't have things as much in common. You start moving around for work, or mostly for work, but you can still call them up or text them and they're still there. And that's how you know you've got a good friend. But how you act around them, it's also funny how you can kind of fall, you know, for people that you know well, like your family, like your brothers or cousins, or, you know, these close type friends that I was talking about. It's amazing how you can just fall back in and almost pick up where you left off with them. And it's how they, you know, they trigger the, like, those inside jokes are still fresh when you start, you know, you get back together and you're chatting for a little bit. And then, you know, next thing you know, you're bringing up memories. And then next thing you know, you've got your inside jokes running again. And you're just thinking how it's like nothing ever changed. And, you know, it's kind of cool. And that's how, and that's your brain, you know, the part of your brain, these schemas that I was talking about is, you know, that was like a categorized section of your brain where you had these thoughts and ideas and feelings, and you were able to just draw back upon them, and they were there. You hadn't thought about them in years, but you were able to draw them back up, and you have, you know, something that gives you that good nostalgic feeling. And you think of the old you, you know, the old me, and you know, think about how things were different. Like I can think back to the neighborhood I grew up in, where I really met, you know, these friends that I talk about. And there was a period of time where it was like that was all that mattered. You'd go to school, but you'd come home from school and it'd be the same group of friends, and you'd be, you know, playing all the games together. And, you know, in our neighborhood at the time, it was, you know, a few blocks, and in those few blocks, we knew every square inch of it for the most part, except for the yards where they had vicious dogs that you couldn't cross into those yards. But you knew the fence line really well, and you knew where to stay away, but you knew them well. Like, you cut through certain backyards to go to a friend's house or to try to catch the bus or something. You know where everybody gathered to play basketball, because, you know, a couple people had hoops, but some of the hoops the driveways had better space for the hoops. Some of the hoops had areas where the neighbors didn't yell as much at you for playing basketball in the middle of the day. Then there were the streets that were the dead end streets that were perfect for wiffle ball games, because, you know, you could not have to worry about cars running you over. And, you know, then there were the fields that were perfect for football. And, you know, it's kind of cool. Like, even now, as I'm talking about it, I'm thinking back and I can, you know, clearly picture all these different locations and the kids that I was hanging out with. And it's kind of fun. And that's, you know, me kind of drawing upon these different indexed schemas in my brain. And the, you know, the big thing to me is how it can, you know, it's how it's triggered, you know. And and another thing that's kind of interesting is how things can get triggered by music, you know, or a smell. That's kind of cool. You know, smell is like that funny one. And actually, smell is the one sense that can have the most effect on triggering memories. But, you know, I smell apples, like baked apples, and I think of my grandmother's house and fresh, you know, baked apple pies, you know, or I think of sometimes the taste, like I taste peanut butter and I can think of peanut butter fudge, you know, and just like that kind of trigger is just really cool. You know, that smell, sense of smell, or that smell is what's actually triggering something in your head. And I think the human brain is pretty impressive, you know, as we probably know all too well. And, you know, even farther beyond that, just how you might end up with your, you know, your partner for life, your spouse or significant other, is sometimes largely based on smell. And what's interesting, an interesting fact, is that some scientists believe that it was actually smelling a mate, a potential mate, that actually led to kissing, and kissing as a way of judging a potential mate, because, you know, the primal instincts were to get close, to sniff, to determine the scent that the potential mate had. And so they'd get close to every part, and then they'd get close to the lips, and then it'd be, you know, kissing would be actually, you know, trying to taste in a sense, taste the mate. And so that's kind of a powerful, like, thing if you think about it, you know, being able to, it's not so much judging somebody based off of a conversation. Like, imagine these people, or yeah, people, they're people, I was gonna say, or creatures, but, you know, the primal creatures that we evolved from, you know, imagine they really couldn't communicate very easily, but they could decide that somebody would be a good, you know, partner by getting close enough to just smell them and then taste them or kiss them. And you have to imagine that people smelled pretty funky when they could not shower regularly or even had a concept of what bathing was. So that's kind of an interesting determination. Do you go off of how bad, you know, this person smells the worst, so they're the best, or they smell the best, so they're the best? Like, I don't know how that would actually work. Then that's a scary tangent I don't want to go down, because it's definitely nice to have to be around people that don't smell. Yeah, it's a nice feature. And then you have those awkward, very awkward times, especially at work, when you've got a stinky person and somebody's got to be the person to break it to the stinky person that they're stinky. And I remember actually working with a guy who had halitosis or something, but had horrible breath, just horrible breath. And everybody occasionally has a moment where they have horrible breath, and they, you know, maybe they don't know it, or maybe they do, and they're trying to, you know, keep it away from you. This guy would come and talk to you like an inch away from your face with this funky breath. And it was kind of a running joke among some of the other people, because we'd offer him gum and he would refuse. Like, I don't need any gum. You do need gum. But it was like, how do you break that to somebody? Because he was so overly confident, so confident that he didn't feel any, well, he also had boundary issues, but he didn't feel any reason to not stand so close to you when he was having a conversation with you, you know, like way too comfortable. But oh my gosh, this stink that came out of that guy's mouth was just was horrible. And I felt bad because you have to wonder, like, what was going on, you know? And you know, it's kind of sad because it's like, you know, we couldn't help but joke about how, like, we didn't want somebody, you know, we didn't want to have a face-to-face conversation with the guy. But, you know, then there was a period of time where there was, you know, one of the people, it was a small office, there was about five or six of us. One of them was brave enough to actually suggest that he eat some gum or brush his teeth, because I guess they just got really tired of it. And then it became, like, really awkward. And it was like, well, you know, we tried to make light of it to get through it. And it's a work environment, so, you know, you don't want to, like, offend somebody. And, oh my gosh, it was just, it was a hot mess. It smelled like hot garbage. But that's interesting, though, you know, bringing it back around to the whole sense of smell, you know, nostalgia, but also could be the determination of who you're going to spend the rest of your life with. It's kind of scary. Better hope that you don't have a cold that day. There's, you know, there's sounds, you know, you might... I like to actually think, so I pause for a second because I'm thinking of the sound of the ocean. But it's really, what's fascinating is if you listen to a big seashell or conch or whatever you call it, and you can almost hear that sound of the ocean and how it makes you feel like, you know, you're close to the ocean, but how sometimes you can almost smell a sea breeze when you do that. You know, that's kind of crazy. And so that one's just a multiple senses kind of working together. So, you know, and it's funny because there, so this is just kind of another random thought, but how, if you ever watch how the special effects are done on movies, specifically like how sounds are done, how, you know, and I was watching Brain Games on Netflix, and I think it was probably the first episode or second episode, but they were talking about how they were doing that Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs movie, how they were making the sounds of the burgers falling out of the sky and just landing all over the streets and all over, you know, the land. And they were just using, like, wet paper towels, like, just with the right amount of density of wetness slapped against, like, pavement or cement. And the way that they were slapping it and then sliding it is what made that sound. Because, I mean, you can't really know. I mean, it wasn't like they were going to go out and they were going to go get a whole bunch of burgers, you know, thousands of burgers, and dump them from an airplane onto a dock and stuff just to try to figure out what the sound is. That's not cost effective. But, you know, so they were doing the sound effects by just kind of matching sounds. And, you know, some types, you know, somebody cracking their neck or something like that to, like, you know, crack their neck to get loose. Like, they were using celery, snapping celery. And so that's kind of an interesting, like, brain trick right there, brain game, because, you know, you're watching it and you're thinking, you know, bones are cracking, muscles are cracking, whatever, you know, as your joints are popping, but it's celery that's actually snapping, that's creating the sound, but you don't see the celery cracking, and you can, you know, clearly you can see the actual character, cartoon character, and it happening to the cartoon character. So that's enough. That's enough to let your mind basically fill in the blanks. And so, you know, again, your brain's pretty powerful. You know, there's other things like taste. Sometimes, you know, you might taste something and get nostalgia, like me, like tasting peanut butter makes me think of the peanut butter fudge. You know, Jelly Belly jelly beans. That's just like, I don't even know. That just seems like a something faulty. That seems something like faulty in this world, but you know, and I mainly say that because there's a booger flavor or a poop flavor, you know, or buttered popcorn flavor in a jelly bean. That stuff's kind of nuts. But the fact that you can, you know, eat something like that and then it can bring back memories. The smell of buttered popcorn makes you think of the movies, right? Sometimes I kettle corn makes me think of an amusement park, you know? sometimes that funky music that the carousel plays, you know, you might hear that music and then think of a carousel at, it's a carousel, right? Yeah, the horses spinning around. I think that, yeah, it's a carousel. I get those confused. Ferris wheel, carousel. Sometimes that music triggers thoughts, but it's all kind of interesting things. And I think that's, you know, kind of fascinating. Now I'm going to take a break and then I'm going to come back and talk about peer pressure. Maybe I won't. You can't pressure me into doing anything I don't want to do. Unless you're a friend. Peer pressure is tough. Peer pressure is definitely a very prevalent thing when you're younger. Although it can happen when you're an adult, you know. Sometimes, you know, I think maybe, you know, people you're working with, coworkers or something like that, maybe that it's a positive peer pressure to, you know, help to get you to aspire to be better or something like that, you know. But I'm thinking, you know, as a youth, you know, that's kind of, that's tough. It's tricky because it's there and you have to learn how to deal with it. And sometimes you're not mature enough to really know how to deal with it. So that can be tough, you know. And in terms of peer pressure, you know, from a psychological perspective, there's actually two types. There's active peer pressure and passive peer pressure. You know, the active is pretty much the scenario you would think of, where you've got a couple friends who are all like drinking, or, you know, want to go, I don't know, want to go, you know, it's not always bad necessarily, but all want to go to the movies, and you don't really want to go to the movies, but they're all like, come on, let's go to the movies, and they're trying to sell you on it, and they do. And same thing as if they try to convince you to try drinking or something like that. And that's where you really need to develop strong morals, and you definitely need to know what you want going into the situation. You know, hopefully your parents did a good job teaching you that you shouldn't do certain things, you know, especially if the things can hurt you. So if, you know, if you're lucky, that'll let you kind of, help guide you, I should say, you know. And, you know, even if you're older, which I suspect, you know, is not, probably no teenagers listening to this episode of this podcast, maybe, but they're being forced to by somebody, I'm sure, by pressure, peer pressure. No, that's how I want to get the word out about this podcast. Go demand that your friends listen to an episode. Yes. But in all seriousness, you know, from a parent perspective, it's something you have to be aware. You obviously know it. You went through it. You went through the peer pressure, but you have to understand that, you know, you got to be careful not to drive a kid in the direction of the friends. You got to, you know, at least, you know, one of the parents should really help to put the perspective and teach them good lessons, you know, and the other should help to reinforce it. But, you know, the main thing is that it's just kind of leading by example. Like, at least, at the very least, you know, just don't do anything that's wrong. Like, not, I shouldn't say wrong, but don't do illegal things. Or if you don't want your kids to smoke, don't smoke. If you don't want your kids to drink, don't drink, kind of thing, you know. And just doing on a daily basis the good things in life that you would like your kid, you know, to be how you like your kids to act. Now, being stubborn might come through and be a little bit harder to hide from your kids, and then your kids might end up being, you know, stubborn. But yeah, you do your best. You know, I try to do my best, but you can have a talk about that kind of stuff with your kids. There's no reason to be afraid to have a conversation about peer pressure and having them understand. And you can do it, you know, when they're young, like young enough to understand it. You don't have to wait until they're a teenager, and you definitely don't want to wait until it's too late. So you have the conversations just to try to make them aware that it's going to happen, you know. And sometimes you'll see it, you know, you might be just in the peripheral of the kids, you know, the teenager or whatever, and you might see it happening, and then you can kind of point it out and be like, you don't have to do that, you know, like you didn't have to go to the movies, or you don't have to go to the movies if you don't want to, kind of thing, because you want to make sure that they are establishing boundaries with their friends. Then there's the passive peer pressure. You know, that is more, you know, you pick up the behavior without it being verbally expressed, and it is one way, you know. So you might actually, you know, so put yourself in the teens, you know, the teens perspective. They're in school. Here's a big one in this day and age, and it has to do with cell phones. So, you know, your kid might not have a cell phone and be hanging out with other kids and seeing the other kids, and they're talking on their cell phones or texting on their cell phones, or they're talking about their new cell phones or whatever it is. And they're just kind of off on the side at that point. Maybe their friends don't all have cell phones, or their friends don't, you know, maybe their friends are respectful or polite enough to not be on their phones when they're with the friend who doesn't have a phone, and or just, you know, being friends and chatting. But there's other kids around who do have them. And so that ends up, you know, being an influencer, because it makes them think, oh, I need a cell phone, because all the kids, it seems like every kid I look at has a cell phone. You know, it's like that, the concept of, you know, those things that go like crazy viral, like a slap bracelet, or I don't know, jewelry or something, whatever, you know. It could just be that the kid saw another kid, or saw a couple kids with something, you know, and then all of a sudden it was like, oh, that's the new thing. We need it. You know, that happens with clothing, you know, shoes. I mean, and that happens with adults, you know, and sometimes it's kind of like you might be influenced by other adults because you saw them wearing a nice shirt or a jacket or whatever might be happening in your life that you see, you know, you're kind of being passively influenced or passively pressured, you know. Or you may have a scenario where, you know, your kids are pressuring you to buy them some kind of Christmas gift, and then you start to hear on the news that these things are selling out like crazy. This is the hottest Christmas item of the season, and you need to go jump on that bandwagon and get that thing quickly, and so then you fall into that trap of being, you know, passively pressured. So it's kind of it's an interesting thing. It's another psychological thing. You know, one of the things that I remember studying in college that was really interesting was like consumer behavior, because you're definitely influenced by other people. I mean, not only are commercials reinforcing it, but then you see a celebrity promoting something and you think, oh, I want that because, you know, this celebrity had it. You know, that's the worst sometimes when you see like people just getting it because a celebrity had it, you know, or one of those famous for being famous type people, like a Kardashian, whatever, whoever's trendy at the time. But, you know, they make a living off of people like following what they do and then buying their stuff, you know. And that's, again, that's a type of social pressure. I'll say it's peer pressure. I mean, peer pressure is really has to do with your friends, you know, your close-knit friends being an influence on you. But there is such a thing as social pressure. You know, you're often pressured by what you see around you, you know. There's also like this, that strange effect, which I forget what the term is. Maybe it's, well, it's kind of like placebo, but it's not really placebo. Can't think of the word. But, you know, it's that idea. I think it's called like hysteria. Well, hysteria is the thing, but it's like related to hysteria, where, you know, if one person starts freaking out because of something, and let's say you're all at like an amusement park, and for some reason, you know, somebody starts freaking out because they say, oh, somebody was infected with some disease. I don't know. Coronavirus, which is very, very prevalent right now. It won't be probably next year or something. But, you know, it used to be SARS or MERS, or Black Plague, but right now, coronavirus, you know? So that in itself could create some kind of panic and hysteria. And, but the thing that I'm thinking of is where, you know, it's like hysteria driven illnesses. And I forget, I think it might have been a Malcolm Gladwell podcast actually, where he was talking about, you know, a kid drank some soda and then some Coke specifically, and then threw up. And then another kid who had drank the Coke thought they were sick too and started throwing up. And a whole bunch of people were throwing up. And it was all these kids were just throwing up all over the place. And it was like, it was related to hysteria, because they went back and they actually tested and they found there was nothing wrong with the Coca-Cola. So, you know, it just happened to be this kind of this hysterical outbreak that everybody psychologically thought something was wrong with the Coca-Cola, and then they got sick, you know. And I find that kind of fascinating, you know. It's also, you know, where if one person starts running from something, like if you start running from something and then somebody else starts running from something, and you don't see what they're running from, but you feel the sense that there's like a danger and there must be running for some reason, you might start running away from something. And there may be nothing there, but you've just like convinced the other person just by your actions that they should run. And, you know, that's another thing. It's like, it's just this, the fascination, or I'm fascinated by this, like how psychologically we can be completely affected by strangers for all intents and purposes, you know? So it's interesting stuff. But back to peer pressure. Now, the peer pressure is a problem because obviously it's a problem. But when it comes to addiction, you know, substance abuse, it can be a lot worse. Because if these kids' friends, or your, let's say your kid or your daughter, if her friends are doing drugs or, you know, drinking or something like that, just by the virtue of hanging out with them, like there's a higher chance that your daughter or son or whatever is going to start doing drugs, you know, or drinking, because it's going to be hard for them, especially if that's how they are, you know, it's a way that they're bonding together, because they're, you know, they've kind of, this is something to do. So you definitely have to have those conversations with your kids to establish that this stuff is bad way before this would ever happen, you know, and explain, you know, this is not a good thing, and you shouldn't, you know, partake in this. And you also shouldn't associate with people that do, because as much as you may, you know, you might have grown up with these kids and then they just went down the wrong path, it's hard to sever those ties, but you almost have to, because if you start kind of falling in with them, like it's just going to lead to bad situations. You might be, you know, the kid might be strong enough to avoid it, but they might end up in really scary situations. You know, they might be called by this friend to pick them up from a party that's put them in a dangerous position. And then the kid is now potentially in a dangerous position. So it can be scary stuff. You got to be careful. But I thought there's a couple of things that were interesting about peer pressure in general. And, you know, that there were some tests, like these experiments done related to peer pressure. And one of those experiments was where essentially there was a peer who was giving incorrect answers to a vision test. And then, you know, the other peer was basically giving incorrect answers to match those of the peer. And what was fascinating about it is when there was just one friend that was there, one peer, you know, it didn't happen as often, but when they got up to four peers, it found that was when that was the strongest influence was happening at that time. You know, and then they found that when they went beyond four peers, it never got any stronger. There wasn't any higher of an influence. So it was like the four peers was the magic number in order to, you know, influence this other person to report incorrectly on purpose. So that was kind of interesting. Now, the other test that the other experiment that I saw was that this, you know, this history teacher had, you know, designed an experiment, and they designed it to teach students about the appeal of fascism. And the teacher progressively implemented more totalitarian and disciplinary and strength-oriented measures in the classroom. And by the fourth day of it, all the students were essentially ready to join the fascist movement. And, you know, it's because, you know, the teacher was in a position of authority and power, and it was able to influence the students. I don't know enough specifics about the actual age range of the students, but, you know, I think it does have something to do with their age. They were kind of on the younger side, not like, you know, maybe middle school or early high school is my guess. Not kindergartners, because that'd be pretty messed up. And, you know, on that note, age can have some, you know, age can have an effect on the pressure. Like, I feel like, you know, younger kids aren't susceptible to peer pressure, but if they're under the wrong influence, they may learn wrong. You know, they might learn the wrong things because that they don't really necessarily know any better at that period, but, you know, they're less likely to care so much about their friends. I mean, to some degree, they still kind of care what their friends say. But, you know, I guess I like that there is that age up until, like, you know, before middle school where it feels like kids can be kids and be silly and you know, act like dopes and be really kind. And it's not under the microscope that you are under as you kind of get into the teen years. That's sad. But it's important to just know these things because, you know, as you kind of grow up, you know, you kind of grow away from that. But if you have children, you kind of want to help guide them away from that because it's, you know, it'd be important for them, important life lesson for them. Now, in terms of peer pressure in adults, I think one of the biggest ones, I mean, ones that I can directly relate to, and I talked about this in an episode, I talked about quitting smoking, but it's smoking. As adults, you know, you're not necessarily being peer pressured into smoking, but you kind of are being peer pressured into not stopping smoking, you know, because you might hang out with adults that all smoke. You know, and then it's like it becomes part of your ritual or your routine to go out for a smoke break with them, especially at work. And so now that becomes kind of a problem. Now you're essentially, you know, you don't want to miss out on the social event of smoking. I mentioned this in that earlier episode I did about quitting smoking called Breaking Habits. And, you know, how I made that joke about how Rachel, you know, felt the need to go Rachel from Friends. Rachel seems like a strange name to just throw out there if I don't put any context, but, you know, the Friends episode where Rachel, you know, pretended to take up smoking because she felt like she was missing out on important work discussions. But that's a real thing. And so there is, to some degree, you got to worry about peer pressure as you get, you know, get older. Or you might even feel, you know, peer pressure. You might feel the social pressure or the peer pressure just by, you know, where you happen to live. You know, actually, it's funny because I could think of there's almost this pressure in the neighborhood I live in to put out bags with candles on Christmas Eve. And, you know, you got to buy the candles from one person in the neighborhood who's organizing this. And it's not like they're super expensive. I think it's like 50 cents a bag, and they give you a bag with a candle, and, you know, but they want you to light up your whole sidewalk, and, you know, you might have to buy 100 bags. But it's like, there's this unwritten, you know, pressure to do it because you feel like you're going to be letting the whole neighborhood down if you don't buy the bags. And the funny thing is this year, we forgot, and, you know, we're just not susceptible to peer pressure, apparently, or we're just, you know, we don't care that much, you know, my wife and I. So we just didn't do it, but mainly because we forgot to put the order in time. And we happened to drive around the neighborhood on Christmas Eve to see the bags. And we saw the house that's like diagonally across from the house where the lady organized this. And they used brown paper bags. And all the bags that this lady sells are all white. And it seemed like a clear, you know, I don't want to, you know, conform to the neighborhood. You're not going to tell me what kind of bags I put out on my lawn on Christmas Eve and with candles. And it was just kind of funny. It was subtle, but it was funny. And there's that kind of, you know, weird peer pressure, or there might be peer pressure to do activities for your kids or something like that, you know, where you might find, you know, if your neighbors are, putting their kids in all these different activities, and you're just thinking like, oh, you know, I don't want to have to do this. I don't really have the money to do this. But you know, the kid is almost feeling like they're missing out, and then you start to feel bad for the kid. And then all of a sudden you're kind of falling to pressure to try to get your kid to be in the same activity as like a neighbor's kid, you know? So there's those kind of pressures, and it happens. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but it happens. It's easy to be influenced, you know. You might find when you're shopping, you know, you might end up being influenced. Well, that's on purpose. That's marketing. But I was going to say, you go to the grocery store, you're influenced to buy certain things. But it might be that you happen to bump into, you know, a mom or dad from school or a neighbor or something like that, and you see them buying, you know, healthy food or something. I don't know. This wouldn't happen to me, or I don't know anybody that this would happen to, but maybe you feel the pressure to buy some organic food or something like that. You know, actually more than likely it's when you're leaving and there's a Salvation Army, jingler guy. And, you know, you see people donating money to them, and then you feel obligated to donate money because you saw them do it and they saw you, and then they'll look back to see if you donated the money. And so now you've got some peer pressure, you know, or social pressure to do that. Or even better, and you could hear the frustration in my voice, I bet. But, you know, I'm just in a town where it just seems like, you know, I don't know. The word excess comes to mind. But the way that they donate to certain causes kind of irks me, because and then it's almost like you feel like you're getting some kind of social pressure to donate for things that you wouldn't think are that important, like, you know, high tech industrial lights or something, versus you don't have enough chairs or something for the classroom. I don't know. Maybe I'm just being ridiculous. I don't want to really name specifics anyways, but it just kind of feels like sometimes you're getting pressured to put your money towards things that don't really matter, bottom line. So I have to kind of mention that, but that to me tends to be certain kind of locations, you know, depending on where you are. But you definitely will experience it as an adult. And it's all, you know, there's a whole psychological reason for it, you know, because you're kind of going through life not completely on your own. As much as you feel like you're independent, you make your own decisions, which is true, but you're still influenced by other people. And you're influenced to make decisions because you've had exposure to something. It's not like you just crawled out from under a rock after 30 years and then, you know, you're just like, I'm going to go to the grocery store. Well, no, that's probably not an example. I'm trying to think of a good example of something you might be like, if you were complete, it's hard to imagine because, you know, like you might see people who, I don't know, they have like maybe drive certain cars or maybe they buy certain products. Like maybe you feel like, I don't want to buy, you know, a cheap cell phone Like, I want to, you know, I want a good cell phone because you feel that pressure to get a good or a good product. Sometimes that's because, you know, you're actually doing a review of your peers, like you're actually polling and doing research, and you find that they find that this particular cell phone is the best one to do. But you also might feel this pressure to purchase it. Maybe it's like TVs, you know, with guys or something that feels like, you know, I got a 55 inch or a 50 inch or I got a 60 inch or a 65 inch or I have an 85 inch TV. And then you're like, oh, you got TV envy, you know, because you go over to their house and you're like, oh, they got an 85 inch TV and it's crystal clear and I can see the pimples on the quarterback's face, you know, but... You know, there's that kind of influence. That's again back to that whole like consumer behavior thing, where you know you're being influenced by other consumers to exert a certain kind of behavior. Like, oh, you know, it's in your head now. Oh, I'd really like that. I'd really like an 85 inch TV. I've got no wall that would actually realistically fit on, but I'll make it work. You know. Because it's 85 inches and I gotta have it. Or maybe it's shoes or other technology, you know? Like people are starting to get camera systems and it's like, oh, well, what kind of camera system should I get? Or you just happen to go to someone's house. Like, you know, you just see stuff. You just see other people have things. They got this new robot lawnmower. Oh, I want one of those robot lawnmowers, you know? You have a ton of examples. There's tons of examples of just, you're just being influenced by other people and their purchases, or you're feeling guilty for not donating to the Salvation Army, whatever it is, there's pressure all around. But remember, pressure busts pipes. And that's the word of the day that I'm going to leave you with, because I have nothing else that I want to say about this, and that's all I got to say about that. And yeah, so that went well. All right. Thank you again for listening to Finding Your Identity. And I will be back in the future with another episode. But at this rate, it seems like they're turning into once a month, because I just haven't had a ton of time. And I've got other stuff on my mind and on my plate that I've been working on. And I'm sorry. But just seems to be how life is. Sometimes life is life. And thanks for listening. Until next time, this is Finding Your Identity.